Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Q&A special that coincides with the closing of the transfer window in La Liga. You can all breathe out. You heard Graham Hunter, who joins us along with Pete Jensen of La Liga Television. Guys, I don't know what kind of a transfer window we were expecting, but that was a little bit bonkers. Before we begin, we have three new socios to welcome since last we spoke. Jamie Martin, hello. Gavin O'Anon, which I don't think is your real name. I think you don't really want to tell us your second real name, which is fine. Gavin, hello. And Kevin White in Australia. Kevin White's my cousin. Hello, Kevin. Hell of a football player. We asked our socios at patreon.com/GrahamHunter for questions for this Q&A, as we always do. And I have to say that for the first time, the sort of first tranche of questions were all on one single subject. So for the first part of today's Q&A, we've decided to focus purely on one of the most interesting deals of this or any transfer window, which is the loan move of Antoine Griezmann from Barcelona to Atleti. So let's get going with one from socio Robert Ryan, who says, how significant is Griezmann as a transfer to the outgoing and incoming clubs? And before we get to that, I'll add on what Robert says, which is, I once described the signing of Griezmann by Barcelona as onion rings, as I often get as a side at a restaurant. They're excellent, but maybe weren't quite needed as such. Let's begin with Atleti, because I think we'll get on to plenty of Barca in a minute. Pete Jensen, what does this tell us about the position that Atleti are in at the moment?
It tells us they want to win the Champions League. And when you're, you know, you're in a semi-final or a quarter-final of the Champions League and there are 10 minutes left and you're trying to break the opposition down because you need a goal, and if you don't score, you're going out. You've got to have a bench. And in recent seasons, they've not had that, and they've fallen short in the Champions League. And they've got that now because they've got five strikers for two positions. So what is it? Cunha, João Felix, Griezmann, Suarez and Correa. So regardless of whether Griezmann starts, and I imagine he will do, or whether he's the impact player that gets them out of a hole in the last 20 minutes of a Champions League semi-final. So I think it shows the ambition that they want to do the one thing left to do in terms of what Simeone's achieved there, which is to win the Champions League. I think it's a great signing for them. It's going to be fascinating to see how the world's most defensive coach deals with the most attacking squad in European football, or one of them anyway. But I think it's a fantastic move. We thought it was going to happen earlier in the summer, didn't we, with Saul. Everyone had agreed on that. Saul was happy to go to Barca, and that ultimately fell down because Barcelona refused to pay part of Griezmann's wages, and this deal means that they don't have to do that. Atletico pick up the full tab. I don't think he's not going to be paid 17 million euros net, which is what he's been paid at Barca. It's going to be, I think, closer to 10, I think, I've seen. But it's great for him. It's great for Atletico Madrid. And although I don't think he underperformed at Barca anywhere near to the degree people say, I don't think it's that bad news for Barca anyway, because it reached the point where I was at the game. I was at his last game on Sunday against Getafe. And Barca were pretty awful, apart from a great first half hour. But Griezmann was getting all the whistles. So, you know, we'd already reached the point of no return, really. So I think everyone's a winner.
Okay, you mentioned the wages side of it there. Graham, this is a player signed a couple of years ago for €120 million. Included in this loan agreement is a buy option at 40. By my reckoning, he is under contract for another 2 years with another option beyond that. What does this deal look like from Barcelona's side? Was it all about getting one of their biggest wages off the books?
Well, first of all, I hate in this first of the new season to be calling issue, but first of all, we missed the opportunity to point out to all socios that Wee Roberto's dog is named after Gennaro Gattuso, which I think is a starter. And Pete closed on an Errol Brown hot chocolate reference, and you just let it walk past you. Look, for Barcelona, first of all, you know, Pete summed up one of the cornerstones of this, that not to ignore what Robert asked, but the situation was broken. And I think that getting Griezmann out was imperative for both parties, because he'd lost all self-belief, all confidence, all the chutzpah, all the fizz that turns him from a busy player into an exceptional player. And given Barcelona's overstaffing, they call it in Spain overbooking, you know, they have too many players. It might be that they don't have sufficient world-class players, but in terms of numbers, the squad's massively too big. In terms of having a Griezmann on that wage, who'd lost faith in the club, who, I mean, if again, to answer your question, Neil, and Robert's question, if you don't simply look at the prism of, you know, what does it mean instantly now, and look back at, I was fortunate to get a Champions Magazine interview with Griezmann relatively early in his first season, and he was unequivocal, as he had been. There was no exclusive nature of this. He'd said in his presentation, he hadn't come to assuage the guilt of missing a penalty in Milan in the Champions League final against Real Madrid. He hadn't come to rack up massive trophies. And in setting up the player agency that he's got, you know, he's told people in his agency, like, I've got more money than I could ever need. He's not an avaricious guy. Each of us, if we're getting offered, you know, 17 million instead of three, almost all of us are going to take it, maybe do something good with it. But money is not his driver. And therefore, when he said clearly that his motivation for coming to Barcelona, and this was specific, was to learn a new brand of football, to see if he could master the Barca way of playing and whether he could become a better player for it. He wanted to challenge himself. And it doesn't exist. You know, one of the principal things about the last 3-4 years at Barcelona is that even with the resurrection of Sergio Busquets under Koeman last season, it's not a particularly Barcelona style of play compared to what he was dreaming of. There are remnants, but those remnants diminish each year, diminish further without Messi. And Griezmann came back and was patently a lost soul. Now, I don't want anybody to take out like their pocket violins and play a sad song for him, because I think Robert asked you about Barcelona's perspective. It's great business for there to be more clarity about what their strike force is, how it's going to play, what it'll be like positionally. Robert needs to take into account, as do all socios, that they've still got Kun Aguero, who could be a league winner for Barcelona. If right now he's disenchanted, he's injured, as ever, he's not particularly svelte at this stage of his life. But there is a scenario whereby, never mind Luke de Jong, Kun Aguero, if he's persuaded that this is a potentially winning team, and if rather than leaving, and rather than Barcelona shifting him out in the January window, he says, I'm going to give this a season. His goal-scoring prowess, particularly in chances created for him rather than chances just to create himself, because Barcelona are getting close to the goal quite regularly across the three games and then often failing to convert. You know, if Griezmann had stayed and they had Griezmann not knowing where he was playing or really not knowing what he was doing, there's been ups and downs, and I don't mean an outright fallout, but Koeman is a fan of Griezmann, the person, but not a particular fan of Griezmann, the player. It's something that Griezmann knows, has caught. You know, there was an occasion when they were playing away, and Koeman was actually in Paris. Koeman was caught on mic turning to his bench and saying, there's Griezmann again, running around, doing nothing. Things like that get back to you, they corrode your confidence. So in a financial sense, it's good for Barcelona that Griezmann is partially off the wage bill. I echo Pete's enthusiasm about what Atleti are potentially able to do. Their squad looks gorgeous. There'll be a bit of rehabilitation. Simeone and Griezmann were in constant contact. Simeone was like in WhatsApp phone contact with Griezmann throughout his time at Barcelona. And indeed, it was Simeone's wife who messaged Griezmann to say the deal's gone through, because it was, you know, it was so close to the wire. It was actually after midnight. They were given a little bit of added on time to do the all those deals that fell into place, with Saul was the one that had to happen. I'm not sure if Chelsea were slow or they were Olympically quick, but that one had to happen first. Then Griezmann had to happen, and then Luke de Jong had to happen. That was a lot of paperwork, and all the clubs involved, four clubs, were given just a little bit of extra time, and fair fucks to them. So for my money, it is good, but there'll be a where does Griezmann fit? There'll be an equilibrium to seek. There'll be a blast of Professor Ortega, the for my taste, a highly unusual Atleti fitness man who's a guru at the club, and Griezmann has got to be put through those paces, and then I would say in 3, 4, 5 games time, we need to be reconvening and saying, where does he fit? Does the partnership he worked out with Suarez transfer from Barca time? You'd have thought that's a plus. Griezmann's playing relationship with Lamar, which was stunted after a year at Atleti, given how well Lamar is playing, but Lamar and Griezmann get on very well, like playing together. So there's lots of little additional positives. It's the right move. It's very exciting. It's a damn shame for everybody who loves watching football, not Barca fans, just people who enjoy, you know, seeing a good player flourish, that he didn't quite hit his potential, Griezmann, at Barca.
Andrew Pod has a related question. Hello, Andrew. I think this might be the first time we've heard from you. How close to the precipice are Barca, really? The Griezmann deal smacks to me of pure desperation, particularly considering the replacement is Luke de Jong, who you've already mentioned there, Graham. Should the fans be expecting more high-profile departures over the next few years? Also, what is the situation now with the TV deal? So I think Andrew's interested in what this sort of tells us about the ongoing sort of fiscal disaster unfolding at Football Club Barcelona. I suppose we also have to look at the senior players that have agreed to very substantial pay cuts, sort of led by Gerard Piqué and then followed on by Alba and Busquets.
Andrew, the fact is that their financial situation is absolutely desperate. I think it's worse than it looks, because if you just use the evidence of your own eyes, the stadium's still there. They play games every week. They look the same. You know, there's a certain degree of threat when they play well. You know, fans are back. You can still buy merchandising. You know, the club website still works. And if we're used to companies that go to the wall, you can see the death rattle, and you can hear it, and you can see massive redundancies and profit warnings and all that stuff. You don't see that with Barcelona. What we're dealing with people within the club about a potential film project, and the message is it's far, far worse than people are generally understanding. It is deeply threatening. And Neil's given you, Andrew, some of the positives there, and that it is, to my mind, it's utterly remarkable. I think it's probably unique, as in unheard of, in elite world football, that three senior footballers have voluntarily said, here, take all this money back. Nobody should have the wool totally pulled over their eyes. Some of the money is deferred. So it's like, I won't take it now, but I will take it later. But in the case of Alba and Busquets and Piqué, and potentially Roberto, although he's been willing to defer some of his salary just to give Barca breathing space, but they're still negotiating about whether he'll drop money. But in the case of Busquets and Alba and Piqué, they've given money back, voluntarily given money back, saying, right, OK, we agree you don't need to pay us X much. Now, in the case of Piqué alone, the amount of money across the length of his deal could go higher than 20 million euros. Now, I think that is unique. So the plus side is they've had an enormous gesture of faith from players who are doing it not out of the goodness of their heart, but they're doing it to liberate money so that Barcelona can register Depay and can register Kun Aguero. And the principal thing that these three players believe in, because each of them is well over 30, each of them is Catalan, each of them wants to, while they're still at Football Club Barcelona, win trophies. And they reckon that with all the signings on board, like Eric Garcia, who's having a rough time at the moment, Depay, who Piqué's gift of money back to Barcelona allowed to be registered in time for the game where Depay delivered the ball onto Piqué's head for the opening goal of the season, blah, blah, blah. It was astonishing. It was Hollywood. And latterly now, with the money that Busquets and Alba have deferred and the money they've gifted back to the club, suddenly Kun Aguero is registered in case he gets fit and wants to play before January and nicking off to Miami or wherever it might be. So that's the positive side. The negative side is that they've had to borrow more money, okay, on better terms. The negative side is that their debt is absolutely horrendous. It should be enough to, if football were a normal business, it would probably be enough to strangle you out of existence. But this is Barcelona, so Andrew, I'm certain you don't want a more intense and slower paced examination of all Barcelona's finances. But I think you can take it that there will be cutbacks everywhere, that behind the scenes they are sweating, genuinely sweating, and they're looking desperately left, right and centre for any new inventive ways to make money. And it will occasionally look grubby, and it will occasionally surprise people about what Barcelona do, because their situation is so atrocious. Some of it is their own fault. Some of it is down to extraordinarily bad financial planning and extraordinarily bad football decisions and who to sign and for how much. But some of it is also down to a pandemic that, you know, Sod's Law, the worst thing will happen when you can least afford it to happen.
Pete, Andrew mentioned desperation, and Graham just used the same word there. Do you think in this window that Barcelona was seen as marks by other clubs? Do you think they had one hand tied behind their back going into the window?
Yeah, everyone knew that everything that they did in the market had to be for a net gain. The players that they brought in had to be earning less and costing less than the players they were getting rid of. We'll get on to João Félix in a moment and why that could never really happen. I think that was one of the reasons. Barca can't, they've said that they won't be sorted out in terms of having a normal transfer window until 2023. So we've got the winter window next summer, and then let's see what they can do in the January of 2023, or whether it goes through to the summer. So this is a long-term thing. Their wage bill is still between 80 and 85% of revenue, and it needs to be between 65 and 70%. Even when they got rid of Messi, it only went down to 95%, and now they've got rid of Griezmann. To what extent is completely off the wage bill, I'm not sure. And I said right at the start of this that he was off the wage bill, and that's now Atletico's responsibility. Graham then seemed to hint that maybe that's not the case, but regardless, it makes you wonder why Joan Laporta ever thought that Messi could be given a new contract. If that, having got rid of Griezmann and having got rid of Messi, the wage bill is still 85%. I've heard 80%. Either way, it's catastrophic. There were a club that Graham talks about the pandemic, but Barcelona are responsible in as much as they always went right to the limit. And Tebas has said this. He said every club has its limit of what it can spend, and Barcelona were the only club going to their absolute limit. And Bartomeu, if you remember, I'm sure Andrew remembers, made a big song and dance about the fact that Barcelona were the first club to break through the 1 billion for revenue. And he loved the big announcement, Bartomeu. I mean, there was a cheat in that anyway, because they included in that figure projected money that would come in from sales that they then weren't able to do. So it's not going to get any better anytime soon. And losing Messi, obviously they had to do it, but it also creates a problem. The shirt sponsorship deal comes up for renew, I think, next year after this season. How keen will Rakuten be post-Messi to put the same money on the table? Messi's final years would have been so lucrative. Everyone would have wanted to have seen Messi's last two seasons, Messi's last Champions League campaign, Messi's last league game. And once football tourism gets back to normal, then, you know, they could have filled two Camp Nous with people just wanting to see Messi before he retires. So they've completely missed out on that. And that's not necessarily Laporta's fault if he was in a situation which he just couldn't get out of. But so having the fact that he's gone obviously eases them in terms of the wage bill, but it also takes away a big chunk of how they can make more money in these next two or three years. So they're in a bad way. They're going to have to go back to the Cantera. I think it's the perfect time to turn to Xavi. I really do. I think you bring in Xavi now and say, listen, there's no pressure to win things. We've got to finish in the Champions League places for financial reasons. But no one's expecting a European Cup again anytime soon. You come in, you start from, you put the kids in. It's going to take time, but you make it work over a long period of time.
I can't hold back. Do you know, like, this was the time for Xavi, partly because Laporta made it clear that Koeman wasn't his taste. Instead of saying to Koeman, you're carrying on, whatever, he said, let me cast around, let me have a little look. Didn't phone Xavi. Now, players noticed that. And as much as Koeman made a difference last season, there were parts of the season, particularly the latter part of the season, where the players were like, what's he doing here? Now, you've dealt with enough players to know it's a shark pond. And the first bumpy weather that comes along this season, where players consciously or subconsciously go, you know, Koeman isn't fancied by Laporta. That's a death rattle for a training ground.
And what came out yesterday totally reinforces what you're saying there, Graham, because Barca needed some good news yesterday, because of course it was the day after the window had shut. They hadn't had a good window, so the two news stories came out. One was that Ansu Fati is going to wear the number 10, and the other one was that Laporta and Koeman are already talking about an extension of his contract, but with certain conditions. He's got to win things, he's got to play the Barca style, and he's got to start playing Ricky Puig and Samuel Umtiti. So in terms of undermining him, you know, it was 10 out of 10. And for it to come out yesterday, to me, we're right at the start of the season, for that to come out is an indication that Laporte has already got one eye on turning to someone else. Jordi Kroos now installed in the club.
Perfect comic
global.
I think the Catalan is difficult for you and I, but the best I can get is manager in waiting for the Catalan title. I don't know if that's a literal. Yeah, you perfect comic title.
So Koeman's on shaky ground. Yeah, borrowed time.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with the sadly the Griezmann deal that actually didn't happen. João Felix after this.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online.
Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back. Meryn Myrtle doesn't get in touch that often, but when she does, the questions are fantastic. Can you give us a play-by-play, imaginary or factual, of Atletico's offices when Barca asked for João Félix on loan?
Fantastic question, Meryn. Yeah. Well, I imagine it started off with. Atleti are on the phone again. No, the other way around, wasn't it? Barca are on the phone again. What do they want? They want João Félix again. Well, tell them what you told them 3 weeks ago. Because this is not something that transpired on the last day of the window. Right from the get-go, at the end of last season, it was clear that Griezmann had had enough and that Barcelona were going to try and cash in on him. And when I say Griezmann had enough, he only wanted to go one place. He only wanted to go back to Atletico Madrid. Now, post-window closing, it's been said that the only thing that stopped the João Félix Griezmann swap happening was that Miguel Ángel Gil was worried that Barca would do to Atleti what Atleti did to Barca the previous season, and João Félix would go there and he'd bring about a title win. I'm not sure I'm buying that one. I think it's more detailed than that. I think it's more complicated than that, and I think it probably comes down to the fact that it would have cost Barcelona too much money, because João Félix is 21 years old, Griezmann's 29. João Félix cost 120 million euros, and whilst Griezmann's on 17 million and João Félix is on 7 million, I think Atleti would have wanted their pound of flesh from Barca, and I'm not sure Barca could have done it. And obviously, Barca have ended up with the much cheaper option of Griezmann going out and Luke De Jong coming in. So I think it was about the Barca being unable to make that work, rather than just Gil terrified that João Félix would go to the Camp Nou and score 30 goals and Barca would win the league.
I think Meryn's point, Neil, is great, because initially I think there would have been like a degree of hysterical laughter, but after which they'll have, because Atleti will have looked at this and thought, well, so Mendes has been consulted on this, because Barca will have tested out the water about, like, you know, would your client, blah blah blah. For Mendes, there's a big advantage. It felt to me a little bit, and I'm guessing Atleti reacted this way, Meryn, that when Laporta first came to power, he was nowhere in the election race back in 2003, until they did this brilliant set play, which involved Manchester United and Peter Kenyon, and they agreed that Barcelona would say, we will offer you whatever Beckham went to Real Madrid for, let's say it's £70 million, let's just pluck that figure, because I don't remember the exact figure, and we will agree that transfer, we will agree that Barcelona to Manchester United, that we will equal or better Real Madrid's price if you will announce formally that you've accepted Barcelona's bid for David Beckham. And they did, and everybody, without exception, knew that unless Real Madrid, you know, did something outrageous, Beckham was always going to Real Madrid. It was verbally agreed. He wanted to go to Real Madrid. He wanted to be a Galactico. It was his preference to go there. And even at the Laporta press conference to announce it, when Sandro Rosé, his vice president then, was asked about it, he smirked about, like, somebody said, look, is this not just a little bit of razzmatazz? And he couldn't keep the subconscious smirk off his, he was a smirker, Rosé. And it was an admission. It was just a little manoeuvre, a clever manoeuvre, which, of course, the punters who had votes went, whoa, hallelujah, we're suddenly going to be, they were in the middle of a six-year run without trophies. Beckham's coming, we're a player again, vote for Laporta. Now, Mendes in the Joao Felix thing here, from my taste, the deal is, it's a shot across the bows of Atleti saying, well, if this guy doesn't play in this crowded squad, if this guy isn't, you know, Simeone's first choice, there are clubs that want him. They're going to come in, and the low ball offer was never going to be accepted. This you know, idea that they would just get rid of Felix for Joao Felix for a year or longer with either a loan or a loan with option to buy. Atleti have still, at the moment, maybe not Cholo, but Atleti have got too much invested in him. They want the idea of this guy blossoming for them and becoming a little prince of the park. They're still tied to it. I personally don't think it's going to happen. I personally don't think that Joao Felix is as much of a player as people think he's going to become. I'd be happy to be proven wrong. But there's an awful lot of tactics involved. So the initial mocking of Busson and hysterical laughter for their Hail Mary question will have transformed into, okay, there's a play going on here. There's a gambit going on here. No way on earth will that gambit have forced either Gil or Cerezo to say to Cholo Simeone, well, you better get that boy in your team. Because Simeone earns them their money. Simeone transfers them through the latter stages of the Champions League and they rake in 80, 90, 100 million. And that's why he's got the most ridiculous salary. That's why he can more or less do what he wants, because his efforts, what he achieves for the club each season, has kept Atleti afloat. And therefore, Joao Felix will play as and when Cholo Simeone thinks it's right. But there was a game going on there.
So Harrison Schuller asks about Felix. He says, what have you guys made of Joao Felix in his time at Atletico? The move never made sense to me. Now with Griezmann back, his minutes seem even more limited. Why are they keeping Felix? Has his value dropped so much that sale, an outright sale, would be too significant a financial hit? So you started to talk about it there, Graham. It seems like it's up for debate whether Atleti's big bet, and it was a really big bet at the time on Joao Felix, is going to ever pay off or not.
I'm inclined to agree with Graham. It's hard to see exactly what Atleti saw in him to pay 120 million euros, if that's what they did pay for him. The first season was a power play. It was a power struggle, really, between him and Simeone. I think he came in thinking, you know, this guy's not going to be around that much longer. I'm the biggest signing in the club's history. I'm going to end up being the most important player in this part, in this relationship, and this relationship might be a short one. Now, Simeone obviously then went on and won the league. He's there for good. He's entrenched. And Joao Felix played a very secondary part, a bit part, in last season's league win. You know, he's barely used, and Correa and Suarez got the goals in the final game against Valladolid, that won in the league, and those were the two forwards that got Atleti over the line. So there's a game against Granada in that first season where he's come off the bench, Joao Felix, and he wants to play through the middle. There's a hoo-ha going on that he's not happy about being played wide, and he comes on and he plays through the middle. Simeone 5 minutes later makes another substitution, and someone comes on and has to play through the middle, and he's trying to get the message across to Joao Felix that Joao Felix now needs to move into a wide position. Simeone's barking this from the technical area. Everyone inside the stadium, if they're away, I think they're away at Granada, everyone inside the stadium can hear this. The only player on the pitch who can't hear it is Joao Felix. He refuses to move back into this wide position. He keeps playing through the middle, and in the end, another player has to tell him. So they don't get on. There is a, you know, what is that line? What we have here is a lack of communication or a failure to communicate. I mean, it is that.
Shooting on goal, boss.
And it is difficult to see how it changes. The only thing that you can say in favour of it turning out okay in the end is the fact that Joao Felix is 21 years old. I mean, Simeone did take Griezmann, who was a young, flaky winger from Real Sociedad, and turn him into a all-round striker who could outjump Gerard Piqué.
But your exact point was, Griezmann was willing to develop, and Joao Felix, he's waiting for his boiled eggs in the post.
Exactly, the personality of Griezmann and the personality of Joao Felix not the same. Atleti never get mugged, very rarely get mugged in the transfer market. They're the kings of selling someone to Chelsea for 40 million and buying him back 2 years later when he's still got a little bit left in him for 10 million. They don't get done. And to sell, to move Joao Felix on now, they would get done because no one in the world is going to pay 120 million euros, not even a third of that price, probably.
I think to come back as well, I don't want to sort of overemphasize what I was saying before, but listening to you has made it clearer to me. I'd ask the same question. In which way does Joao Felix fit in Ronald Koeman's plan or the overbooking about creative players up front for Football Club Barcelona, given their structure? I think the whole thing was a game and Koeman wasn't behind it. And Koeman was the one at the end of the market making Luke de Jong a really interesting signing. Koeman was the one saying, get me that player. Barca coaches don't often get that privilege. If you remember way back, Cruyff said, I want Jan Molby, and the president told him, well, that it's on you. If you buy a Molby who I don't approve of, if you get the word on that and he fails, you're sacked. But Barca coaches rarely, across the last 40, 50 years, rarely get there. It's a president signing or a director of football signing. And that's why De Jong is interesting to me, because it was Koeman saying, give me De Jong, this will work. But how does Joao Felix fit in Koeman's scheme, in the personnel, in the 4-3-3 that he's going for, in a 3-5-2? Well, maybe. But if he isn't smelling the coffee now at Atleti, then when will he? Because I don't know if you two agree, Neil, Pete, but I'm not comparing him to the class of Riquelme. But he's like Riquelme in the play the game to me, through me, at my speed, and everything will be well. Now, I'm not certain Joao Felix has got the right to demand that, but that's his attitude, that's his belief. Give it to me, no, give it to me here. And like you said about the Granada game, I this is where I should be, never mind instructions. But he doesn't fit in the concept of that team, that manager, in any way right now.
No, and what you have to do under Simeone is you have to be able to play in two or three positions. Carrasco already this season in one game has played in three positions. He started the game up front, he went and played out in midfield, and then he ended up as a wing back. So Joao Felix saying, no, I can only do this, I can't do that. You know, the work to rule is just not going to work with Simeone. And how would he have fitted in at Barcelona? We still don't know what he is. What would he have been at Barcelona? You know, would he, has he got the you know, that acceleration to play as one of the wide players in the front three? Has he got the work rate to play in the middle three? You would have said no. You would think no. It's going to be interesting this season, now that he's got five strikers, Simeone, and he's going to stick with this, let's call it 3-5-2. He's maybe thinking that some of his strikers will be able to play in the midfield three. So maybe Griezmann, maybe Joao Felix, maybe Mateus Cunha, and Correa gets, you know, kicked to play wherever Simeone feels. So maybe Correa as well. So, you know, how he develops this season at Atleti, and if he becomes someone who can play in that three, the way that Lamar is doing so brilliantly and the way that Llorente does as well. But, we'd all given up on Lamar, let's face it. So there is something about Simeone and El Profe alongside him, getting the best out of players and transforming them. So, but it's got a hell of a job on to transform Joao Felix.
Pete, you talked about Atleti becoming expert in coming out of these deals up. So just to close this episode, our sponsors, Bet365, ask what Chelsea fans can expect from Saúl, a player who Atleti were happy to let go first as a possible make weight in the Griezmann deal and then eventually on the loan move to Chelsea. And secondly, they also resisted Manchester United's many advances for Kieran Trippier. So I don't know which of those two moves you want to start with.
Let me butt in, Neil, because I'm increasingly one of the few skeptics, not cynics, about Saúl, and Pete knows him better. And on the United side, I can tell you factually that Trippier was somebody that United tried and tried and tried to get, and their calculations were, well, look at his age, he'd like to come to us, so let's not talk about tapping up. They knew that Trippier wanted to play for United, fact. They also calculated that this was his last year of contract. What they found when they went in were two things that were that became fundamental. One was that in his contract, if he plays a set number of games, which I think is 25 this season, there's an automatic renewal. So Atleti were treating this like a player still who still had 2 years. There wasn't this, we lose him for free at the end of this season. Now, I pray firmly, because he's a big favourite of mine, that no injury robs him of those appearances. Cholo Simeone will not only make sure that arithmetically he gets those appearances, he's a key player. But Atleti then quoted United a relentlessly, what United told me was an astronomical price, which was basically, fuck off, no. If you want to pay quadruple what he's worth, if you're mad enough to come in and pay a literally gigantic sum, then calling on Pete's logic, you know, we're Atleti, we never lose. So I thought that was tremendously smart positioning, in that just to simply say no might have denied them the bonanza of all bonanzas. But they wanted Trippier badly, United. Trippier was willing and happy to come. And if you looked at his face when he came on at the weekend in the last game, it might have been the Elche game. No, it was the last game. And the last time he came on as a sub, his face was like chewing a wasp. You've kept me here. I had a massive move. I had a wage boost coming at a time when United genuinely looked like contenders for honours. In my book, I think they're, although they're the lowest favourite of four for the title, I think they're good dark horses for the Premier League title. And yet, you know, I haven't started here. Get me on. And so I think what we have to come away from this is that in whatever formation, and Pete talked about, like, is it still three at the back, which at the moment it unequivocally is. Is it 3-4-3? Could we possibly? At any rate, Simeone sees Trippier in every aspect, how he trains, how he performs, his delivery of crosses, how much more adept he is at defending, his relentless running. All these things, leadership, winning attitude, Cholo Simeone regards Trippier as fundamental to winning more trophies this season.
Yeah, he was so important last season, wasn't he? And he's probably not really been given the credit he deserves, certainly not in England.
Agreed.
Because, you know, David Beckham turned up in Spain and it took him 3 seasons, was it, to win the league? Or did he even do it in his fourth season? Trippier comes in, he's a league winner. And he was so important to them last season, and their blip came when he wasn't available, and that's no coincidence. I think Atleti have taken on board the fact that he's not going to be staying long term, and they're already looking at Zeki Celik, who's I think 21 years old, Lille right back. So they're already planning for what I think is an inevitable return to the Premier League, but not going to happen this season. And as for Saul at Chelsea, I think the best thing about Saul from Chelsea's point of view is that he's so desperate to prove that you know, he shouldn't have been pushed around from pillar to post at Atletico Madrid, and he shouldn't have just been the guy who plays at full back and then plays at wing back, and the midfielders that were getting in the team ahead of him weren't better than him, and Simeone should have built the midfield around him. And with all that desire to prove people wrong, we saw what it did last season for Luis Suarez at Atletico Madrid. So hopefully, from Saul's point of view, it will have the same effect for him at Chelsea.
I don't want to predict stormy weather because I haven't enjoyed, like, last season I didn't enjoy Saul's performances at all, and that may be because he was sick and fed up with being played out of position. And you know, Pete, that over the last couple of summers, few summers, there's been pretty intense efforts from his representatives to see if he could be placed in England. This is the accumulation of a long, long process. And maybe he just got up to here, and even while winning the title, and you know, he said that he couldn't stay at Atleti, and much though he's respected, because I couldn't stand another season like 2 seasons ago or last season. Okay, fair enough. Maybe what I was being critical of and not enjoying was the fact that he was just up to his, you know, his neck. We just had enough of it. Okay, fine. But One of the things I'd say is he's gone to an extremely different environment at Cobham. Tuchel at the moment is riding the crest of the wave because what he did in the transformation of the system, the performance, the stinginess of Chelsea, lifting the big trophy at the end of the season, the love affair is a massive love affair between, you know, the British media in general and Tuchel, because he's extraordinarily charismatic and articulate and flamboyant when you're broadcasting him, when you're talking to him. All these things make a pretty sexy package. But he's a hard, harsh man. He has favourites. He's very, very unworried about standing on people's toes on a daily basis. Now, that might remind you of a lot of great managers, but people don't really understand the Simeone environment. I mean, if you're out with him, fine, you're out. The Simeone environment is much more paternal. It's much more collegiate. There are things that are do not cross this line with Cholo Simeone, but the atmosphere and the daily work atmosphere, his interaction with players is much more involved and warm, and it's not like that with Tuchel, and therefore I'm not seeing bad weather ahead for sure, but Saul is sparky and individualistic and not an imp, but definitely a live wire personality. So it has to click, and maybe it clicks, and the two of them are absolute dynamite, and it's splitting the atom for Tuchel and Saul. But it's just worth watching, because where he plays in that team, how often he plays, Tuchel is not likely to say to him, yeah, super left midfield, super. My cunning plan is left wing back. I'm not saying that's going on, but Tuchel recently played Pulisic at left wing back and Hudson-Odoi at right wing back. He's not immune to going, your players are playing exactly where I want you to, and bollocks to you if you've got a complaint about it. So I hope for Saul's sake that another player that Manchester United wanted, inquired about, asked their Spanish players, what's he like? Should we be getting into him? They got positive answers back, but they didn't do the deal. So I really...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really hope that there's a click between Saul and what he's always dreamed of, the Premier League tempo, and a click between Saul and Tuchel, so that we see this guy who at this age, if he's renewed under Tuchel, he can be an enormous asset to the Spanish national team, an enormous asset. So fingers flipping crossed.
That does it for part one of the Q&A. We'll be back tomorrow with more of your questions on what happened in Spain during the window out with the Antoine Griezmann deal. For now, thank you very much for listening. Socios, thank you very much for some excellent questions. There'll be much more soon.